Invite you to turn in your Bibles with me to Judges chapter 18. So in your Old Testaments, the book of Judges, the 18th chapter. It's a long chapter. We're going to read it together this morning from verse 1 down through 31 of Judges 18. So Judges chapter 18, starting to read in verse 1. In those days, there was no king of Israel. And in those days, the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in. For until that day, an inheritance had not been allotted to them as a possession among the tribes of Israel. So the sons of Dan sent from their family five men out of their whole number, valiant men from Zorah and Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said to them, "Go, search the land." And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. When they were near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite. And they turned aside there and said to him, "Who brought you here? And what are you doing in this place? And what do you have here?" And he said to them, "Thus and so has Micah done to me, and he has hired me, and I have become his priest." And they said to him, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous." And the priest said to them, "Go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval." And then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were living in security after the manner of Sidonians, quiet and secure. For there is no ruler humiliating them for anything in the land. And they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. When they came back to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtaol, their brothers said to them, "What do you report?" And they said, "Arise, and let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it's very good. And will you sit still? Do not delay to go, to enter, to possess the land. Will you enter? When you enter, you shall come to a secure people with a spacious land, for God has given it into your hand, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth." And from the family of the Danites, from Zerah and from Eshtaol, 600 men armed with weapons of war set out. And they went up and camped at Kiriath-Jearim in Judah. Therefore they call that place Machanah Dayan to this day. Behold, it is west of Kiriath-Jearim. And they passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the five men who went to spy out the country of Laish answered and said to their kinsmen, "Do you know that there in these houses is an ephod, household idols, a graven image, and a molten image? Now, therefore, consider what you should do." And they turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare. And the 600 men, armed with their weapons of war, who were of the sons of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. And the five men who went to spy out the land went up and entered there, and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. And when these went into Micah's house and took the graven image, the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" And they said to him, "Be silent. Put your hand over your mouth and come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man, or to be priest to a tribe and a family in Israel?" And the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and household idols and the graven image and went among the people. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. When they had gone some distance from the house of Micah, the men who were in the house near Micah's home assembled and overtook the sons of Dan. And they cried to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you that you have assembled together?" And he said, "You've taken away my gods, which I made, and the priests, and have gone away, and what do I have besides? So how can you say to me, 'What's the matter with you?'" And the sons of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest fierce men fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household." So the sons of Dan went on their way. And when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. Then they took what Micah had made and the priest who had belonged to him and came to Laish, to a people quiet and secure, and struck them with the edge of the sword, and they burned the city with fire. And there was no one to deliver them, because it was far from Sidon, and they had no dealings with anyone. And it was in the valley, which is near Beth Rehob, and they rebuilt the city and lived in it. And they called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan, their father, who was born in Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. And the sons of Dan set up for themselves the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's graven image, which he had made, all the time that the house of God was at Shiloh. We find in Judges chapter 18 a glimpse into the life of the people of Israel. From Judges 1 through chapter 16, chapter 16, we saw accounts of the judges, that cycle that we kept seeing, how the people of Israel would be in peace, they'd become lackadaisical and start depending on themselves, they would end up sinning, God would bring in a foreign people that would take them captive, they would cry out to God, please deliver us, we've sinned against you. They would repent. God would deliver them through a judge that he raised up. They'd go into a time of peace, and then the whole cycle would start over again. We saw that cycle reach the bottom in chapters 13 through 16 when the people of Israel no longer even recognized that they'd been sinning against God, when they didn't recognize that God was bringing discipline upon them. And yet God was still gracious to them and said, I will begin to deliver you from the Philistines. As we came to chapter 17 through chapter 21, we find a lengthy conclusion to the book. No longer are we looking at the judges, at those men and women who were raised up by God to deliver God's people. But rather, we are seeing little glimpses of life into Israel. The accounts of chapter 17 through 21 are concurrent with the other judges that we have seen. This is not following in a time period that's after Samson. Most likely these chapters are recording events during some of the periods of the judges we've already studied. But we do see our human author of the book of Judges giving us this glimpse into life, just so that we can see how far God's people have come away from him. And in Judges 18, we see something happening. Even though this is an account that took place over 3,000 years ago, we see the same thing happening today. And that is this, that people choose to disobey God, but yet still seek God's stamp of approval on their disobedience. We see it happen in Dan, and we see it happen today. This week, normally on Fridays, I have a Rotary Club meeting, but we didn't meet this week, and so I went over to Hy-Vee for breakfast with some guys from church. And I noticed out of the corner of my eye that there was a man sitting all by himself that I was very envious of, because it looked to me like he ordered three breakfasts and he was going to eat them all himself. I mean, he had one of everything on the menu. He had the sausage and the bacon and the eggs and the pancakes and the fried potatoes and toast. And then off to the side, he had a big platter of biscuits and gravy. And every person who's over 40 years old was saying, oh man, that's not fair. Now, if Hy-Vee was smart, what they would do is get their in-store dietitian to stand right by that area. And as everybody came through, just tell everyone, you chose a great meal there. That's perfect for you. The only thing is you need a little bit more sausage gravy on your plate, because this is flu season. You want to keep your energy up. And then that restaurant would be full if someone was there just to give their stamp of approval. And so often, we know that a choice we've made or something that we are hanging on to in our life is not pleasing to the Lord. But instead of confessing it and dealing with it and removing it from our life, instead we seek someone to tell us that it's okay. And I guarantee you, if you ask enough people, someone will tell you that your actions are okay. Christian bookstores are filled with literature that should not be there, of authors saying that some area of your life is okay for you to keep. Because people want to hear what makes them feel good about themselves. Even if it's a stamp of approval on something that God says shouldn't be part of your life. And here we find in Judges 18 that very thing happening in the tribe of Dan. We find a people who are seeking someone to tell them that they're okay, that God is happy with their actions, even though they are clearly disobeying what God has revealed to them in a very concrete way. As the section opens in verse 1, we find the people of the tribe of Dan. It tells us they are seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in. And then, as I preach out of the New American Standard Bible, it translates the Hebrew words, "For until that day, an inheritance had not been allotted to them as a possession among the tribes of Israel." It's a very poor translation of the Hebrew words. Actually, oftentimes, at least in the New American Standard, some of the things they have in the notes and in the column saying literally it is, it would be better if they put that there. Because literally, what that verse says is until that day, it had not fallen to them. The way verse 1 is translated in the New American Standard, it makes it sound like God has not provided a land for them, and that is not true. God has given them a land. What's going on is that it has not fallen to them, meaning they have not taken the land that God clearly told them to take. And if you look back at keep your finger in Judges 18, go back to Judges chapter 1, verses 34 through 36, it says, Then the Amorites forced the sons of Dan into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come down to the valley. And what's happened is the Danites, these people of the tribe of Dan, were not willing to obey God. God said, you go in, you remove the people out of the land which I give to you. They went in, but they said, man, they're too tough, we better retreat. And they retreated to just a tiny portion of the land that God had allotted them. We also know from Judges 13 through 16 that the Philistines were oppressing them in that same region. So instead of doing what they should do, confess their sin of disbelief and not trusting God and taking the land that God had showed them, and secondly, asking for God's help, instead of that, they think, well, we'll just go find a new land. We'll do what we think is best. Even though God clearly in His Word has given them specifics of the land that they are to possess. And by the way, when God calls us to do something, He will always equip us to do it. And even though God said, this is the piece of land I want you to take. This is the land in which you should live. It was too tough. So they said, let's go find a new piece. So on their way they go. They choose 5 men in verse 2 to go out and spy the land. And as they go out, they come across the person we were introduced to last week in chapter 17. This Levite. This Levite who was so callous toward God that he ended up hiring out as a priest because he got a pretty good salary. And he is reigning over a shrine filled with idols. And evidently, verse 3 says, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite, probably picking up on his accent from the region in which he lived. And they go to him and say, what are you doing here? And his response in verse 4 was, he tells them about Micah and says, "And he has hired me, and I have become his priest." Setting up for, hey, he gave me a good salary. I decided to do my own thing, and I'm his personal priest. And we talked last week that Micah kind of viewed him almost like, I'll just go rub my hand over the head of my priest, and good things will happen to me. He's like a lucky charm. And so these five Danites, these guys from the tribe of Dan, come to the priest and say, "Do we have God's stamp of approval? We know God told us we're supposed to live here, but that wasn't working out so good, so we're going to do what we think is best." And they say to him in verse 5, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous." You know what? If God clearly delineates something in the Bible and tells us his parameters, there's nothing to inquire God about as far as should I do it or not. And God had clearly given them his parameters, but they said, "Well, we're going to do something else. Will you ask of God if that's okay?" And the author of our book, in a very pointed way, doesn't say, "Then the Levite went and inquired of the Lord," or "Then the Levite went and prayed." It just is this very quick statement. The Levite says, "Go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval." And again, literally, what the priest said was, "Your way in which you are going is before the Lord. He sees what you're doing. Go in peace." It reminds me of going to a Chinese restaurant and opening the fortune cookie. That thing inside the fortune cookie will fit everybody. And he said, "Be at peace, your way is before the Lord." You know what? Anybody could say, "Your way is before the Lord." Yeah, God knows my path. The going peace is a stretch. But what that Levitical priest did was give a stamp of approval. He said what the Danites wanted to hear, and they said, "Great." And they go on their way. They come to this region of Laish. It's great because even though they are under the rule of the Sidonians are far away, and so they basically leave them alone. And it says in verse 7 that it's a place of it's quiet and secure. And the Danites say, "Man, this is it. We have found our resort." And they go back home and they tell the rest of the leadership of the tribe of Dan, "We need to go take this." And in verse 10 it says, "For God has given it into your hand." We've got God's stamp of approval. Isn't it interesting how so often we want a stamp of approval on what we do? Even if I go to the store and I'm going to pick out some oranges, what do you? I bet you do the same thing I do. I look for that Sunkissed label. Because if it says Sunkissed, even though I'm a victim of advertising, if it says Sunkissed, I'm saying that's going to be a great orange. It's not going to be one of those gross ones that are all woody inside that you just want to chuck against a wall, you know, those yucky ones. It's going to be juicy. It's going to have great flavor because it says Sunkissed. If I have that stamp, then everything's going to be okay. And the Danites wanted that stamp. Even though they were clearly outside of God's revealed will. Even though God had been very specific with them about the land in which they are to live, hey, we're going to do our own thing, and we'd feel a whole lot better about it if you told us it was okay. And they found someone, just like you and I can find someone. Whatever we do, there will be someone out there to say, "Yes, it's fine." Keep your finger in Judges. Turn back with me to the book of Joshua, chapter 13. And in Joshua chapter 13, in verse 6, we see the Lord specifically telling Joshua that the land is to be divided. And if you look at verse 6, toward the end of it, it says, I will drive them out from before the sons of Israel, only allotted to Israel for an inheritance, as I have commanded you. It's very specific. I am going to tell you what the allotments are. You do it, or you allot it to the people the way I command you. Now, if you come over to Joshua chapter 19, in verse 40, in Joshua 19:40, we see specifically in verse 40 that the territory of Dan is given a specific piece of property. Then the seventh lot fell to the tribe of the sons of Dan according to their families, and the territory of their inheritance was Zorah and Eshtaol, and it goes on, and we recognize some of those same names in the text we're in today. God said, this is the piece of land for you, tribe of Dan. This is to be your possession. And what the Danites should have done is confess to God and say, God, we have not been obedient. We have not gone into the land. We have not taken the land the way you told us to. We grew fearful of the obstacles that were in our way, thinking that I'm not sure we can do it because it looks too tough. And instead of, out of fear of the obstacles, we caved in and did our own thing and then sought your approval. What they should have done is confessed it and then asked God's help. Help us to take the land that you want us to take. But instead, they followed their own path. Turn with me over to the book of 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy, verses that are so timely for the age in which we live. 2 Timothy chapter 4. And in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3, we read this. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate for themselves teachers in accordance to their own desires, and will turn away their ears from the truth, and will turn aside to myths. Very poignant verses that talk directly to us today. Churches are filled with people telling their congregation things that will make them feel good and what they want to hear. Christian bookstores are filled with scores of books that will tell people what they want to hear. That's why we have to come back to what God says. What does the Lord have for me? Well, people say, listen, if you take that literally, yes, that's what it says, but there's a deeper meaning, and that's really what God wants us to have. And if we seek far and wide enough, we'll find someone to say, yeah, it's okay what you're doing. It's okay what you're thinking. Your actions are okay. You've got God's stamp of approval. Even though we hang on to things that God hates. In fact, as we come to verse 11 down through verse 26, we see the Danites thinking they have God's stamp of approval on their life, but they're embracing things that God condemns. In verse 11, it says that the Danites take 600 men, and they go to Laish. And on their way to Laish to conquer it, they come back past Micah's house. And the five say to the 600, hey, you know this house over here? Do you know that they're, in verse 14, do you know that there are in these houses an ephod and household idols and graven image and a molten image? Thou for therefore consider what you should do. Very pertinent question. What should we do? According to Deuteronomy chapter 13, verses 6 through 11, what they should do is go kill the Levite and destroy the idols. That's what God's law calls for. If someone starts worshiping other gods, they were to be stoned. And that's what the Danites should have done. That's not what they did, because they think they've got God's stamp of approval on their life. And so, let's embrace it. And instead of destroying it and destroying the Levite, they take the household idols and the ephod and the graven image, and they're saying, hey, let's go set up shop in Laish. And the priest, the Levite, comes, and what are you guys doing? And said, just be quiet. Do you want to stay in this little tiny place with this little salary, or do you want to come with us, be a priest over a whole tribe, and we will treat you good? And it tells us in the text that he was happy. It's better for you to be a priest to the house of one man, or be a priest to a tribe and a family in Israel. And the priest's heart was glad. Hey, this is a good deal. And they all go off happily toward Laish. And then Micah finds out that they've taken him stuff, and he heads out after them. It's interesting in verse 24, he says, you have taken away my gods which I made. It's like, I've got to protect my gods. Shouldn't it be the other way around? And you've taken my priest, my lucky priest. And then he says, what have I got left? And the Danites basically say, leave or die. That's a very quick translation. It says, do not let your voice be heard among us, lest fierce men fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household. You get out of here or we're going to kill you. And he leaves. And we find the Danites embracing things that God says should not be part of their life. And they think they've got God's stamp of approval. My middle son, Ethan, is in a history class at Linmar where they are have just studied the Civil War and the rebuilding of our country. And eventually they started talking about the Ku Klux Klan, and their teacher was explaining that the KKK is having a real resurgence, and their main target today is Hispanics. And so Ethan went out on the website, and it was amazing. In fact, they have, the KKK has their homepage, and you look up their website, and Ethan found it to be true, and I looked it up too, all of the Christian jargon that they use. And they, and on their website it says that they are a Christian organization and their number one priority is to be obedient to the things of God. They think they've got God's stamp of approval, and yet they embrace things that God hates. Jesus talked a lot about people who fall into the trap of thinking that they're okay with God, and yet their hearts were far from Him. They thought they had God's stamp of approval on their life. In Mark chapter 12, verse 38, Jesus is talking about the religious leaders of the day. And in Mark 12, 38, He talks about these scribes, and He says, and in His teaching, He was saying, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes, like respectful greetings in the marketplaces, and chief seats in the synagogues, places of honor at banquets. They are the ones who devour widows' houses. And He's saying, you know what? They think they're right with me, and yet they're embracing things that I hate. They're taking advantage of people who have nothing. And one of the things that we have to be so careful of in our own lives, if we look into our life and we know that we are embracing things that are outside of God's revealed will, it's a sign to us that we have found some way to feel like we've got God's stamp of approval on our disobedience. Somehow we've rationalized away to say, God's happy with this. It's a very dangerous place for us to be. We find it reaching its culmination in verses 27 through 31 in the fact that the Danites, thinking they have God's stamp of approval on their life, actually start doing acts of worship. They set up for worship. The problem is that their worship is outside the boundaries of what God accepts. And we see that so vividly portrayed because in verse 31, at the end of our chapter, it says, "So they set up for themselves Micah's graven image, which he had made, all the time that the house of God was at Shiloh." You see, God's people at this period of time were to worship at the tabernacle, which was set up at Shiloh. And in one phrase, it shows that God's true worshipers were worshiping at Shiloh. And what was happening at Laish, in this temple that was set up, was worship done by people who think they have God's stamp of approval on their disobedience, and it meant nothing to God. You know, there's another sad statement in verse 30. And when we read our English Bibles, for some of you at least, we may not see it, because early on in the transmission of the Hebrew Bible, some of the scribes were so embarrassed about it that they added a letter in a word to change it. In verse 30, in fact, the New American Standard translates it this way, "And the sons of Dan set up for themselves the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom," Jonathan is our unnamed Levite priest that we've seen for two chapters, "Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests to the tribe of Danites." Now, in the Hebrew language, in the original Hebrew, there were no vowels. It was just consonants. Later on, they put the vowels in. And by changing one vowel, they could make the word Moses into the word Manasseh. And what happened was, actually, this Levite priest who's been ruling over this temple filled with shrines with idols in it, it's Moses' descendant. In fact, if you would look with me at Exodus 2:22, I think we've got very strong argument to say that's what is happening here, because in Exodus 2:22, it tells us that Moses, with his wife Zipporah, gave birth to a son, and they named him Gershom. Also, in some of the Hebrew, oldest Hebrew manuscripts that we have, the name there is Moses. It's not Manasseh. So we have support in some of the Hebrew manuscripts that we have in possession that the word Moses was there. Now, here's the point. Moses is like Mr. Israel. Moses is the one who followed after God. Moses is the one through whom the Old Testament law was given. And depending on how you interpret the word "son of," this could be Moses' grandson who has been leading this worship for personal gain over graven images. And it speaks thousands to the fact that my faith cannot be forced onto my son. At some point in time, my son, your daughter, your grandson, your granddaughter, their faith has to be in our own heart. We cannot follow God for them. And as much as we'd like to think that we can control them, we can't. It has to be their decision. What God calls us to do is to live out our faith and to teach our children the way that they should go, and live out our faith as best we can before the Lord by His empowerment. Here we find quite possibly a grandson of Moses is the one who's been leading this false worship. Two places of worship next to each other. One acceptable to God. One run by people who think they have God's stamp of approval over an abomination before the Lord. When my wife and I lived in Dallas, Texas, we went to church one Sunday morning with some coworkers. The pastor, the senior pastor of the church, had a doctorate in worship. It was phenomenal. They had antiphonal singers in platform areas at different places throughout the auditorium. And they sang back and forth across. And they had trumpets and an orchestra. And it was just unbelievable how phenomenal it was. And I think it meant nothing to God, because that church was hollow. Because all they did was teach a message that people wanted to hear and have their ears tickled. What is true 3,000 years ago is true today. Paul talks about in Colossians 2:23 a self-made religion. And it's very easy for us to find someone to say, yes, you're okay. God's happy with you. Just do what you want to do. And it brings us to a point as we look at this passage, of remember, we can always find someone to tell us that what we're doing is right. But God is not going to accept acts of worship from people who think they have God's stamp of approval on their own disobedience. And it causes us to reflect on our own hearts and make sure, if the Spirit of God is bringing conviction to your life, and you know in the depths of your soul that you are making a choice or choices that are outside of God's revealed will for you, and you're hanging on to that, or I'm hanging on to that, it's a sign that somehow I have convinced myself that I've got God's stamp of approval on my disobedience. Someone has told me it's okay. Or I've told myself that it's okay. And what we need to do is what the tribe of Dan should have done. We confess our sin and say, God, help me do this according to the way you want it done. Give me your enablement to live for you.